From the Land Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of May, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. We'll hear again today from entomologist at the University of Illinois, Nick Sider, this time around about some of the applied research that's been done in the last year and how you, as a producer, can access it. And then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast, the cold weather, particularly in the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Kansas and Colorado, and what might happen here in the Midwest as well. We'll do that with Mike Tenora, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn in Chicago for the day finished at $4.67.5, a penny lower on the afternoon. The September contract at $4.74.25. It finished 0.75 cents lower, and December at $4.89.5, down a half cent. The July beans, $11.92.25, 2.5 lower. November at $11.73.5, down 2 cents. Bean meal, $1.60 higher. The bean oil, 87 cents lower. And soft red winter wheat, down 5.5 cents at $6.27.25. The hard red down 19.75 at $6.67.25. Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Tell me about conditions on the ground where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, it's awfully wet still. You know, we had an inch and a half to 2 inches of rain here this week, and so really not much going on. In all honesty, that rain, I don't think people were too upset about it, because in a lot of cases it helped some corn come up and maybe some beans as well. And so, I do think there's probably going to have to be a little replanting here and there. Maybe not as much as what there would have been without the rain, though, because ground got kind of hard after that last previous Monday. Heavy rainfall. So, it's going to be a few days yet. We'll see what the weather does. But if nothing happens, I'd say by next Monday or Tuesday, maybe some guys can sniff around and do something.
They'll get a little heat by then, probably as well. That'll help out a crop that is in the ground. What do you see in the marketplace at this time?
Today was interesting in that, you came in here, and of course, crude was getting worked over again earlier in the morning. Crude, as you and I talk, is off $5 off the lows, And so, corn had gone down on the July. We'd gone down underneath, 50-day moving average and, kind of bounced right back up and actually closed above it. And, the 20-day, I mean, if you look at Dease corn, it basically went right down to the 50-day, bounced off of it. Both of those settled, above those two moving averages. And so, July corn settled 6.25 off its low. Well, I don't have a settlement, but that's what the last price was, about 6.25 off the low. Whereas Dease corn got all the way down to 483 here today, but closed around 488.5. So in all honesty, some buying kind of came in where it should have came in. You look over at soybeans and, you're about 10 off the lows there. If you look at the charts, same type of situation, went down the 50-day, tested it, actually went below it, and then settled above it. So I think it feels a little better going home today than maybe what it did yesterday.
Yeah, not so bad today. Wheat futures are sharply lower today. I assume that's because it didn't get as cold in much of the hard red winter wheat growing regions as was expected, and maybe that there's rainfall coming in parts of Europe that will be very good for the crop there too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're talking a global market here, and the same thing we've talked about lately. Obviously, that western wheat crop's in a lot of trouble, but we're not a huge player when it comes to the world wheat export market. So overall, I've got to think the wheat market is going to continue to see maybe a sideways to lower type trade as long as they're getting better weather over there. Now, at the same time, the hard red crop, Oklahoma's rated awful this week. Kansas tours next week. It's going to be rated awful as well, I'm sure. So no doubt we're going to take maybe a couple hundred million bushel off that crop. And that's going to tighten up the balance sheet for us somewhat. But, once again, it's someone's harvesting wheat pretty much every month of the year. So it's pretty tough to get super excited about our wheat crop. I know guys don't want to hear that out west, but I don't know that we're going to race too much higher right now without additional information, if you will.
I asked about it particularly because I want to know about the spread between corn and wheat and whether that spread is going to hold down corn or whether you just think we have a sideways trade in front of us for the time being for the marketplace.
I mean, you know, when you look at the spread, you've got to think that's going to kind of narrow in a little bit. It might have as much to do with wheat maybe backing off a little as corn moving up. I think as far as the sideways action, we've been looking for sideways action on corn for the most part. Now, if we're fair about it, you know, December corn 17 off the highs this week. But at the same time, in the grand scheme of things, you know, I don't really expect from here to acreage, if you will, for a massive amount of movement, unless maybe some of that Chinese business comes in. You know, we're talking that could be part of the trade deal. The whispers of Chinese interest in U.S. corn the last week or so has continued to kind of excite a few people, but we want to see purchases before I think anybody gets too carried away.
I had asked one of your broker colleagues earlier in the week, Naomi Bloom, in fact, about acreage and what USDA might do during next week's USDA report. That'll be the first look, numbers from WASDE for the new crop. Now, I got to thinking about that. It's not really the acreage they ever change, but it is the yield that they will change at that point, given planting rates. Do you think that might happen?
I don't think so, Todd. I think that if you were running, like, for instance, vastly behind a pace, it might be a situation. Now, we all know that some of the higher production areas, eastern Iowa, parts of northern Illinois, you know, maybe didn't get off to the start that they wanted to. But, you know, you're actually running right at the planting pace for this week. You know, so I don't necessarily see that. I mean, what they're going to use is most likely that 183 from Outlook Forum on yield, which is kind of their standard protocol. And then they'll use the planting intentions number at 95.3. And so, you know, from there, you just got to kind of guesstimate. What does demand look like? And so, you know, we actually came up with something just shy of 1.9. We feel pretty strongly that the reduction in acres is going to still, you're still going to see really strong demand. We kind of feel like old crop balance sheet could tighten up just a shade based on exports, even though we kind of feel like that feed number is still a little too high.
And finally, on world politics, a couple of things going on as it's related to Iran. The Trump administration and those in Iran are working through some details, maybe above one-page agreement that might offer up some room for them to negotiate for a month. However, it appears Iran still wants to have control of the Strait of Hormuz. And the other thing that's happening is that oil tankers are showing up off the coast of the United States. I'm wondering what impact that might have, if any, on the commodity markets for grains and oil seeds.
Yeah, I mean, Iran did come out and say, you know, they basically rejected Trump's deal, said it was unrealistic and that they're going to have to do something, you know, as far as some reparations and, you know, benefits for Iran that they called tangible. And so, yeah, I don't know that we're quite where we want to be. I think Trump is wanting to sound optimistic. Of course, he's catching a ton of heat on energy prices. But, you know, what that might mean for commodity prices for us, I mean, there's no doubt that you've seen soybean oil follow crude oil around quite a bit here. Soybean oil here today, again, of course, was off. But, I mean, we put a multi-year high in this week. So, you know, we took the thing all the way up to 78.50. And that's a pretty salty price. And so I've got to think that if we establish ourselves again in that $100 and above level, it's not going to do anything to kind of slow down the interest, if you will, in owning some of these products like soybean oil that make renewable diesel. So, you know, the U.S. isn't the only ones wanting to do that. I mean, Brazil's talking about 100% mix. Other countries are talking about a heavy mix of soybean oil and renewable diesel. So those are all good factors. And I've got to think if crude oil stays strong, you're still going to see a lot of interest in owning commodities.
Hey, thank you much, Matt.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Here are a couple of news items for the day. First, we'll circle back to something that happened late last week. The Trump administration dismissed all four women and one man who were elected by their peers to the United Soybean Board last year. The 70-member board is elected by the nationwide soybean checkoff members in each of the represented states annually. Now, they serve 3-year terms. After the organization selects board members, the U.S. Department of Agriculture signs off on the nominees. 3 of the 4 women say USDA gave them no explanation for their dismissal. The women rejected include soybean farmer Sarah Stelter of Wisconsin, Carla Schultz of Michigan, and Susan Watkins of Virginia. Now, Watkins, by the way, has been on the board for 6 years and was appointed treasurer in December. She told reporters she was working her way up to become a chair of the board. Clearly, that's no longer the case. The Virginia Soybean Board appealed the USDA's dismissal of Watkins, but USDA replied saying its decision was final. Now let's stay with USDA for the moment. Today, it published the final rule regarding stocking standards for retailers participating in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance, or SNAP, program, saying it would ensure a broader variety of nutritious food is available to SNAP participants at authorized retailers across the country. Retailers authorized to accept SNAP benefits must now carry 7 varieties of items across 4 categories of staple foods: proteins, grains, dairy, and fruits and vegetables. This change, USDA reports, more than doubles the requirement of available foods, emphasizes more whole foods, increases the perishable food requirements, and eliminates loopholes that for too long, it thinks, has allowed retailers to count certain snack foods toward their staple food requirements. Now, it's unclear how the retailers USDA is targeting with these new requirements will react. The agency made note of 3,200 suspect outlets, saying oftentimes these are the only stores easily accessible by the local population. That's an important fact because those 3,200 stores might simply choose not to accept SNAP rather than change what's on the shelf or make the necessary investments to purchase and store highly perishable goods. USDA maintains the rule changes will ensure vulnerable families in need have more nutritious options wherever they shop, but by demanding more accountability from retailers who not only have stocked the bare minimum, the agency will change what is on the shelf. Now, these updates go into effect fall of 2026, and the department plans to issue additional guidance to retailers in the coming weeks. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. You know, crop scientists here on the University of Illinois have published their brand new 2025 Applied Research Results Guide targeted to farmers. And Nick Sider says this is designed for producers to use when making insect and disease control decisions.
So every year we put together the results from many of our applied entomology and pathology trials into a report that we post to the Extension website. It's not necessarily everything that we do in a year, so we choose the trials where we feel the results can directly inform management practices in corn and soybean. So for example, if we're evaluating different commercially available rootworm insecticides in a field experiment, we'll go ahead and publish that in the report because it can give farmers a third-party evaluation of what they might expect if they use those products on their own farm.
Sider, of course, is a field crops entomologist here on campus. The report, it's not exactly new. Well, it is new for this year, but not a new report.
We've got a report available now going back to 2018. So every year since 2018, we've gone ahead and published that. Some are bigger, some are smaller, but it's something that we've been doing for a while and plan to keep doing in the future.
Here's an example of what a farmer might find useful in that 2025 Applied Research Results Field Crop Disease and Insect Management Report.
So one thing we looked at this year that I'm pretty excited about, we went and took a look at extended diapause in northern corn rootworm. And if you remember, that's the trait that that insect can use to potentially circumvent crop rotation as a control. And this is the first time in really several decades in Illinois that anybody's looked at this. And so I pretty neat to get a good look at it. That's work with Dr. Joe Spencer in the Natural History Survey. You know, that's in addition to the usual efficacy trials on corn rootworm that we have in there, several fungicide efficacy trials, insect, pest, and disease surveys. We've also got a report on the effect of soybean insecticides on insect counts and yield in field experiments that we conducted throughout Illinois.
Now, those of you wanting to access the University of Illinois Extension's applied research results can find it online. Just go to go.illinois.edu/pest-management-research-report. I know that's long. go.illinois.edu/pest-management-research-report. Or it might simply be easier to search for applied research results, comma, Illinois. That's applied research results, comma, Illinois. Let's turn our attention to the global growing regions and what the conditions are like on the ground in each of them for the crops. We're joined by Mike Tenora now. He's a T-Storm Weather president and CEO there in Naperville, Illinois, online at tstorm.net. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us. A lot of area to cover today. Important to begin, I think, though, in the hard red winter wheat growing regions, particularly of western Kansas, parts of Colorado. They were supposed to get very, very cold last night. In fact, cold enough that it could have been a killing frost freeze. Did that happen?
Well, it happened in parts of Colorado, but for a majority of the crop, it did not happen. Temperatures fell to between 32 and 36 degrees in western Kansas, as well as western Oklahoma. And then it was 1 to 3 degrees colder in Colorado. So overall, temperatures were a little bit warmer than where they could have been. And more than likely, the damage to this crop from this event was probably fairly limited, at least in the major areas of Kansas and Oklahoma.
Now, while that happened, it did not fix, of course, anything related to the drought. How dry is it there and how concerned should we be?
Well, I think you should be very concerned. If you look at rains over the last 60 days, basically about half of the U.S. crop had under half of its normal rainfall over that period of time. And that's the highest since about 2014. And we could look at all different measures of rains over the last 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, even going back 6 months. And no matter how you look at it, we're in a pretty significant drought. It's hard to pin exactly where we're going to line up compared to past years, but our records go back to 2012 and basically say this is going to rank right up there with some of the other years like either 2014, 2022, or 2023. So we'll see how that pans out. And that even includes that we had some rain over there over the last 2 days in Colorado and in western Kansas, those two areas that had some frost this morning.
What's the forecast look like for those areas?
Well, there's no major rains ahead, at least over the next 7 to 10 days. And we are going to go through a pretty significant weather change over the next 5 to 10 days. The central U.S. is going to turn a lot warmer over the next 5 days, and that will initially start in the plains. We'll see high temperatures in the 70s, 80s, and 90s on most of the hard red winter wheat crop for at least 7 to 10 days, starting around Sunday and Monday. So a big shift toward warmer weather. And that's also going to extend into those spring wheat areas. Now, for spring wheat, they'll probably enjoy this because they'll be able to start growing quickly and the lack of rain will allow planting to move forward. But Todd, that's a sensitive line because if we stay dry and warm like this, then eventually it would become a little bit of a problem, at least for, well, for both of these crops, spring wheat and hard red winter wheat in the northern plains. So that'll be the next thing to watch, with rain chances pretty low for the next 7 to 10 days.
Turn your attention to the Corn Belt, the Midwest. Start in Nebraska and work your way eastward, please.
Well, that warm weather is going to be great for growing corn and soybeans in the northwestern growing areas. So that's maybe the first thing to take home. Secondly, there's not very much rain in the forecast for the northwest half of corn and soybeans either. So planting is going to move forward fairly quickly from Nebraska through Iowa and then points onto the north through the Dakotas and Minnesota. Now, as we move south and east, as you know, it's pretty cool out today, and that's going to last for about five more days. It will also turn warmer in the eastern Corn Belt as we move into the second half of next week, but there will be a little bit more rain than what we're talking about to the northwest. Now, that being said, we're not looking for heavy rain, but there certainly will be some storms around over the next 3 to 4 days in Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. And then we'll probably see a little more rain as we move through next week in that transition from cool weather back to warm weather. So overall, maybe not ideal for the south half of U.S. corn and soybeans, but looking pretty ideal to the northwest.
As is typical in South America, the Brazilian crop, particularly for corn, Safrina's second crop, we've now moved past the monsoon season into the dry season for it. There have been concerns that there are drier than maybe expected kinds of areas, or maybe it's just slightly abnormally dry. But if you could give me your outlook, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we would argue that soil moisture throughout most of March and April was pretty good. We didn't have ideal soil moisture, but we had some pretty nice rains here and there, and that kept all of the things that we monitor in check. So pretty much everything was looking fine going into May. Now we're in May, but a big upper level high has formed in the northern areas, and that's basically going to mark the start of the dry season for about 70% of this crop. You can go back maybe 5 to 10 days, and that's probably when the dry season will have officially started once we're able to review the entire season. And that's not ideal for that crop, just because if you can keep it cool and you can keep it wet all the way through May, that's where you tend to get your bumper crop. So that doesn't look very likely at this point in time, so we'll just have to kind of watch that. The southern 30%, though, of this crop will continue to get some rain, so they're not going to be having much of a story there with soil moisture in good shape and more rains ahead.
Tell me finally about more of the northern hemisphere, particularly across Western Europe all the way in through Ukraine and Russia.
Well, yeah, we think that's important because even though we've been talking about this drought for the U.S. hard red winter wheat crop, which is significant, we're seeing kind of the opposite develop in Europe, Russia, and Ukraine. A lot of these areas had some pretty nice rains over the course of the last 6 months. And even though parts of Ukraine have been drying out recently, it looks like a pretty stormy pattern is setting up for all of these areas. The jet stream is basically going to line up from Europe into Western Asia, and that should bring some pretty nice rains to most of the wheat crops across the European Union, into Ukraine, and then across Russia as well.
Okay, thank you much, Mike.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Todd.
You're welcome. That's Mike Tenora. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Do not forget that we'll record our Commodity Week program this afternoon. It'll air on our home station in its entirety tomorrow, many of these radio stations over the weekend, and be up online at willag.org, that's willag.org, this evening, or in your favorite podcast application. Search it out by name, Commodity Week. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report for Thursday. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.